from deep inside your radio.
Every week it's something. I guess that's the idea, because otherwise it would be every week the same thing. So last week it was the lovely new art direction of the Le Chaux Dome, rendering it really not a dome at all, not even a conceptual dome now. This week, it's something a bit more cosmic, ladies and gentlemen, that I've been adjured to talk to you about at the beginning of the program. Actually, one station threatened if I didn't talk about this, they weren't going to carry the show. Ooh. So I'm going to talk about it. How about that? How about knuckling under the pressure like that? There are going to be sunspots during this week's edition of Le Chaux. I'm not talking about your complexion. I'm talking about radio. There wasn't one right there, but I don't think it'll sound like that. I think it'll, you know, white noise it up a little bit. But there are sunspots. They interfere with satellite reception, especially if your station has a dinky little dish. No, I'm sure your station has a great big fine dish that's been tweaked to the nines. But anyway, if you're listening in on Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon, there will probably be a sunspot interruption. And the neat thing is, because I asked the sunspot experts here at the Le Chaux Dome, all right, when during the broadcast? Because maybe I'll put the boring stuff. There is no boring stuff, I know, but I mean, just I said, you know, when will I could put that stuff then? Well, it depends on where in the country the station is and how big their dish is. Because if they have a dinky little dish, there'll be a big... Nobody in public radio has a dinky little dish. Anyway, this is all by way of saying if something goes goofy during the broadcast, more goofy than usual, more goofy than would be normal for this time slot, it's because there are sunspots. And there's nothing we can do about it. Now, if you're hearing the program Sunday night, it's fine. Everything died down on the sun. We cooled down the sun for you. Well, you know, it's evening. The sun takes a break, too. Anyway, so, I'm sure it's affecting other programs on public radio today. I'm not going to feel singled out by the sun. That's my pledge of mental health to you. Hello, welcome to the show.
Jump from mouth to jump from mouth. easy when two are divided and one has decided to bring down the curtain. And one thing for certain, there's nothing to keep them together. How does it happen that two can be tender and one be the lender of love and emotion that covered the ocean of sadness that kept them together? Love when it started was easy to measure. Each day was a pleasure, each night an adventure. Each morning was something that had to be shared together. Love when it's growing is full of surprises. Its temperature rises from higher to higher, then turns into fire that has to be shared together. Sadness which follows the laughter, and shortly thereafter a dream had exploded. A promise was broken, now few words are spoken together.
Turns black with pain, but the rain remembers your face, and the streets know your name. I'm wasting my time, wasting my time. I've been wasting my time. I'm wasting my time, wasting my time. I've been wasting my time. From his heart and his head, we're on the same lifeline. I held one hand behind my back, but the rain remembers your face, and the streets know your name. I'm wasting my time, wasting my time. I've been wasting my time. I'm wasting my time, wasting my time. I've been wasting my time. When I took him like a vow in the dark, the future fell off me. This pain is all I I've been wasting my time. I'm wasting my time, wasting my time. I've been wasting my time, wasting my time. I've been wasting my time, wasting my time.
Well, some of this time is going to be wasted because it's, you know, the sunspots. That's all my only point there, ladies and gentlemen. You see, hello, welcome to the show from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. Some things at the very, very top of this section of the broadcast that you may not have read. For that matter, I may not have read them, but I'm going to read them now. And it's because we want to all be on the same page, don't we? That's really the whole deal here, is let's be on the same page. Noted deep in the White House's proposed fiscal year 2004 budget, the administration is proposing to exempt the Pentagon's controversial National Missile Defense System. That's how controversial it is. All the S's are H'd. The controversial National Missile Defense System from operational testing that's legally required of every new weapon system, because they want to deploy it in a hurry. So why would you make sure that it works, you see, ladies and gentlemen? The requirements are intended to prevent the production and fielding of weapon systems that don't work. Last year, the Missile Defense Agency was already given managerial autonomy and procurement procedures that were intended to ensure new weapons programs remain on track and within budget were removed from the Missile Defense Program. So, just to speed things up, we're not going to make sure it works. And I think that's only a fair way to do anything. You know? Don't ask me to prove it works. Just let me do it. Please. Please. I have pointed this out before in this broadcast, but perhaps it needs pointing out again. During the presidential debates of the year 2000, here is what then putative President Bush said about American foreign policy. Were he to become the president of the United States, I think they ought to look at us as a country that understands freedom, where it doesn't matter who you are or how you're raised or where you're from, that you can succeed. I don't think they'll look at us with envy. It really depends on how our nation conducts itself in foreign policy. This is Governor Bush speaking in 2000. If we're an arrogant nation, they'll resent us. If we're a humble nation, but strong, they'll welcome us. And our nation stands alone right now in the world in terms of power, and that's why we have to be humble, and yet project strength in a way that promotes freedom. So I don't think they ought to look at us in any way other than what we are. We're a freedom-loving nation, and if we're an arrogant nation, they'll view us that way. But if we're a humble nation, will respect us. Oh, he continues. I'm not so sure the role of the United States is to go around the world and say this is the way it's got to be. We can help. I want to help people help themselves. I just don't think it's the role of the United States to walk into a country and say, we do it this way, so should you. I think we can help. I know we've got to encourage democracy in the marketplaces. I think one way for us to end up being viewed as the ugly American, this is George Bush, 2000. I think one way for us to end up being viewed as the ugly American is for us to go around the world saying, we do it this way, so should you. I think the United States must be humble and must be proud and confident of our values, but humble in how we treat nations that are figuring out how to chart their own course. Ladies and gentlemen, please. All right, so are we on the same page? We're going to be humble. We're not going to be arrogant. They're going to like us. Don't you think? Yeah, me too. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. The apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Ottawa, Canada. Liberal MP Carolyn Parrish apologized for the second time in as many days for her anti-American outburst as her government rushed to staunch the damage. The anti-war MP from Mississauga, made a terse statement in the House of Commons saying she regretted her remarks and that she had apologized to U.S. Ambassador Paul Cellucci. These are difficult and frustrating times for everyone, she said. I share a fear of imminent war experienced by many Canadians. That fear and frustration does not justify my comments. She offered her second apology less than 24 hours after saying She hated damn Americans referring to us as bastards. A senior liberal said there was concern in the prime minister's office and the caucus over her remarks, given Prime Minister Jean Chrétien's recent efforts to broker a diplomatic deal over the Iraq situation there, eh? Mr. Chrétien is on a state visit to Mexico, where he and President Vicente Fox discussed the Iraq situation. The official said Ms. Parrish was not strong-armed by the party to make the second apology. However, in an effort to assuage the damage, Defense Minister John McCallum added several lines to his speech yesterday to the Conference of Defense Associations annual meeting. Who knows what that is? As American difficulties increase, he said, we should resist any temptation to become smug and superior. Said a liberal MP who also represents Mississauga. Canadians do not hate Americans. We pray for them. We care for them. And we respect them as a nation. The spokesman for the Canadian Embassy in Washington said about 30 emails, faxes, and letters had been received at his mission by midweek from the Americans who did write us. It's strong comment. And outside of the Canadian context, I think it just hit some people right between the eyes. The U.S. consulate in Toronto received about 25 calls from people expressing their outrage. And Ms. Parrish's colleagues also expressed their concern. So, Canadians are sorry. Very, very, very sorry. Cornell University sent welcoming letters to 1,700 high school students who had submitted early decision applications, including nearly 550 who had already been rejected 2 months ago. Greetings from Cornell, your future alma mater, the email letter began. Congratulations on your acceptance into the class of 2007. Exclamation point, close quote. That's two congratulations from Cornell, your future alma mater. That sentence also ended with an exclamation. I wouldn't, you know, me personally, I wouldn't want to go to any university that uses exclamation points in its acceptance letters. It just sounds too much like a tabloid university. It's me. I mean, why would any university be using exclamation points? Congratulations and welcome, and you're not in, really. Within a couple of hours, the university followed with an oops letter admitting it made a mistake and offering its apology for any confusion and distress this message has caused. Period. No exclamation point. It said the message was the result of a systems coding error and that it had fallen short of treating its all applicants, its goal, with sensitivity and respect. College admissions officials say mistakes at admissions offices are not unusual. Many of them process thousands of applications in a matter of weeks. What was unusual here was the scope. For the students who were whipsawed into thinking that Cornell, their first choice school, had changed its mind, the errors added one more layer of distress and confusion to the already emotionally charged process of application and exemptions. And acceptances and or in just a few hours, the mood among some of the 550 affected students who received the unexpected congratulations exclamation point letter and their college advisors swung from surprise and excitement to resignation and dismay. I know mistakes can happen, but this kind is devastating to the student and family, said Susan Wilmer, director of college counseling at the Brooks School, in an email message to other guidance counselors and admissions officials. Brooks is an independent boarding school in North Andover. The apologies of Cornell don't quite cover the disappointment of my senior, she added. She said the experience had been embarrassing for the student who did not wish to discuss it. Angela Griffin-Jones, Cornell's dean of undergraduate admissions, said she was notified of the error. I was in shock, she said. I'm still in shock. She said in preparing to send the welcoming letter to the 1,128 students Cornell had admitted, a clerical staff member entered the wrong data to download the names and included the names of students who'd been denied admission, along with those who'd been accepted. Yeah, well, that's natural. That's a natural clerical error. Include the denials along with the acceptances. That is, we've all done that, haven't we? Someone in the office soon noticed that too many messages had been sent and discovered what had happened. Cornell officials raced to correct their error and sent out the apology. Ms. Griffin-Jones, the dean at Cornell, said congratulations letters had been running late, and in our haste to get it out in more timely fashion, this is what has occurred. So the excuse is, we were late, so we did it. We were in a hurry. We were late, so we did it badly. I would say if you're going to Cornell, try that on your professors. See how far you get. I was late, so I pressed the wrong thing and plagiarized from another. Because otherwise, I was wouldn't get it in on time. It doesn't say what state this is, does it? I believe it's Minnesota. The commissioner of the state agency that oversees workplace health and safety laws apologized because her law firm did not provide workers' compensation coverage for its employees as required by law. That's cute. And in England, a Birmingham, it's got to be Birmingham because it's England, otherwise it would be Birmingham. A Birmingham radio station has been fined £15,000, that's about $20,000, after four people were left with severe frostbite after a competition stunt went wrong. See, even in Britain, radio stations go nuts with this stuff. Radio station challenged contestants to sit on blocks of dry ice to win tickets and backstage passes for a music festival in Birmingham. The incident resulted in four people being treated for severe frostbite, with three of them requiring prolonged stays. Ouch. Two women and a man spent about 10 weeks in the hospital recovering from extensive skin grafts, which they had to undergo following the Coolest Seats in Town event outside the station's headquarters in August 2001, said the health and safety executive of the British government. Quote, the idea was quite a stupid one, and as a result, three members of the public were left severely disfigured. They suffered loss of skin, fat, and muscle, and were left with permanent scarring. Said Helen Terry, a 25-year-old who spent 3 months in the hospital. It was just horrendous. You just don't think anything like that is going to happen. I was told it was the worst burns the nurses at the unit had ever seen. The surgeon said that if they had been on my hands or feet, they would have been amputated. That's how serious it was. With a husband and two kids, my husband was a single parent for 3 months, and the kids were asking, where's mommy? Where's mommy? It's just unbelievable. The last 18 months have been a nightmare, and I just want to get on with my life now. Unquote. A wife and mother, who decided to sit on a block of dry ice to win some concert tickets. The radio station admitted breaching health and safety laws during a hearing. The station is owned by London-based conglomerate Capital Radio Group. Paul Davies, operations director for the group, said the company deeply regretted the consequences of the competition. It was never our intention to place anyone in jeopardy, and we sincerely apologize to the participants and their families for their injuries and distress. We have put all the necessary steps in place to ensure a situation like this cannot happen again. The dry ice stunt was not the first time the radio station in Birmingham had attracted controversy with its competitions. In a contest 4 years ago, the station created a blind date wedding when two people who had never met each other got married. Can we say it all together? The couple split up 3 months later? Okay. Those, ladies and gentlemen, those would be, would they not, for you now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week, and it would be a copyrighted feature if only I got around to copyrighting it. And now, it's been a while, but you know what I'm going to do now? I'm going to read the trades for you. Don't thank me. It's what I do. And this is from a trade publication which I've taken to reading from more and more frequently because it's so damn good. It's Current, the trade publication of Public Broadcasting. I'll read from it for you. Yes, I will. Don't thank me. Don't send me money either. Speaking of money, to encourage corporate underwriting, the PBS board has okayed 30-second underwriting credits for its most generous corporate donors. Is that the same length as commercials? Yes, it is. You're right. Faced with underwriter vacancies on major series, the network will double the usual 15-second credits for underwriters whose donations exceed a threshold initially proposed to be set at $2.5 million a year. Voting nay, among those voting nay, was PBS Vice Chairwoman Susan Howarth. She said, "To be perfectly honest, I've been torn about this one." She has worried that 30-second spots could make public TV look more commercial and hurt its reputation among other funders, including government. But she also hopes that 2 30-second spots will make PBS seem less cluttered than 4 15s. But wait, there's more. Plans in public broadcasting for a war in Iraq. I'll read that for you, too. In the event of war or terrorist attacks, PBS has assigned special primetime coverage of breaking news to the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer and Washington Week. Schedulers have begun compiling a primetime schedule of G-rated repeats that stations can air if emergencies disrupt the March Pledge Drive. Even as the likelihood of war grows, many public TV managers agree March Pledge is too important to cancel. If bombs start dropping mid-drive, many plan to suspend pitching for a few days while PBS offers special coverage. After that, each station will decide when to resume Pledge, says Robert Altman, PBS Senior Development VP. Continuing. Lessons learned from September 11th, 2001 are guiding stations as they prepare for wartime Pledge. We learned from 9/11, whenever money you miss, you never really find it again, says David Leroy, audience and fundraising consultant with Track Media Services. Track, I guess they're consulting to PBS stations, Track is advising stations to drop Pledge Drive for the first weekday of war and to resume them within 3 days. Other tips for wartime Pledge. Avoid telemarketing phone calls during the initial days of the war. Create messages around the uniqueness of public TV, not the value of premiums. Be sensitive to the programs they air and how they pitch. Avoid the appearance of milking the conflict by airing programs with much flag waving. In the context of war, musical performance shows will be less offensive than someone telling me to smear salmon oil on my nose, Leroy comments, referring to Nicholas Perricone's Wrinkle Cream specials many stations run during Pledge Drive. Above all, he advises, stations should never apologize for fundraising. Of course not, otherwise they'd end up in the apologies of the week. As it is, they ended up in this copyrighted segment when I read the trades for you, ladies and gentlemen. It is allegedly a copyrighted feature, this broadcast.
I love to linger in the moonlight on Honolulu Bay. Fond memories cling to me by moonlight, although I'm far away. And all the beaches are full of peaches who bring their yukes along. And in the glimmer of the moonlight, they love to sing this song. If you like a ukulele lady, ukulele lady like you. If you like to linger where it's shady, ukulele lady, linger too. If you kiss a ukulele lady and you promise ever to be true, and she sees another ukulele lady fooling around with you, cry
an awful lot.
Maybe she'll sigh,
and maybe not.
Maybe she'll find somebody else by and by,
to
sing to. When it's cool and shady, when it's really wicky wacky, woo. If you like a ukulele lady, a ukulele lady like you. She used to sing to me by moonlight on Honolulu Bay. Fond memories cling to me by moonlight, although I'm far away. Someday I'm going where breezes are blowing and lips were made to kiss. And in the glimmer of the moonlight, I'll hear that song I miss. If you
like a ukulele lady, ukulele lady like you.
If
you
like to linger where it's shady, a ukulele lady linger too. If
you
kiss
a ukulele lady, and you promise ever to be true.
And
she
sees another ukulele lady fooling around with you. Maybe she'll cry
an awful lot.
Maybe she'll sigh,
and maybe not.
Maybe she'll find somebody else by and by,
by and
sing to. When it's cool and shady, when it's really wicky wicky.
Like a ukulele lady, ukulele lady, like you.
Like me, like I like you, and we both like the same. And I'd like to say, this very day, a ukulele lady like you.
Ukulele lady like
you.
You.
Special guest time on the show, and once again, we're very glad to welcome back an exclusive visitor to these precincts, as far as I can tell. Not copyrighted, but just as good as Ralph the Talking Computer. Ralph, welcome back.
Thanks, Harry. It's good to be back.
It's great to have you back. Ralph, last time you were on the show, you were reading a selected list of the UN Security Council resolutions that are being ignored by countries other than Iraq. It was sort of a departure for you. How did you get a lot of feedback for it?
Well,
mm-hmm.
I got some good response.
Excellent.
But also some negative emails.
Really?
You know, from people saying, hey, Ralph,
yeah,
stick to reading Larry King's columns. That sort of thing.
Yep.
Say, who do you think you are? Getting political all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
Like some kind of electronic Martin Sheen or something.
Well, you know, these
you
are...
You know,
yeah.
Harry,
yeah.
People think being a talking computer is just about the best job you can have in show business.
It's pretty good.
But some folks are always trying to put you in a box.
Well, in all fairness, Ralph, you are a box.
Okay, fine. I can go be on with the car talk guys.
No.
You know,
yeah.
I have heavy accent software.
I'm sure you do, but no, don't threaten. So today you've done some research, and it's also on a topical subject, I understand.
Well, Harry, as you know, there's a lot of hostility in this country right now towards the French.
Oh boy, yeah.
I don't want to say how I feel about France.
Okay.
But let me put it this way, the only thing that folds faster than their shirts is their army. But we in the business field.
Yeah, so you've done some research because there's a part of this reaction is against the word France or French in our language.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Some fast food joints are already changing the name of French fries to Liberty Fries.
Liberty Fries. But that's like during World War One, when in this country the name of sauerkraut was changed to Liberty Cabbage.
There you go.
Okay.
But I have a feeling this thing is going to go a lot farther.
Really?
And of course, when I say I have a feeling, I'm being metaphorical.
Of course, because...
For that matter, when I say I'm
you're being metaphorical. Okay.
Anyway, I've compiled a list of the next usages in the language to be replaced.
Excellent.
And with your help, I want to introduce them to my fellow Americans.
Your fellow Americans?
Yes. Hmm. I kind of wanted to hop aboard this patriotic talk radio feel in the country.
Yeah.
And what better way than to help strip the language of all references to France and or the French.
Okay, well, I have to hand it to you. You're keeping up with things, Ralph. All right, so these are the next uses of French in the English language to be on their way out in the current climate. And Ralph the Talking Computer, you want music? Of course you do.
Does a Frenchman like Jerry Lewis?
Right.
Of course I want music.
Of course, you shall have music. How's that?
That's lovely.
Okay.
Here we go. Okay. I'll do the old version, you do the new.
Alright.
French kiss.
Freedom kiss.
French toast.
Liberty toast.
French twist.
Says read this in, some of these say read this in character.
If that's what it says, then that's what it means.
She came into the room, just looking like a dream, in a Dior gown and a Liberty Twist hairdo.
Thank you, French Bean.
All American Bean.
French Horn.
Freedom Horn.
French Window.
Liberty Window.
French doors.
Liberty doors.
French bread.
Freedom bread.
French Canadian.
Non-British Canadian.
French connection.
All American connection.
French lick.
It's another character one. Larry Bird, better known as Larry Legend from Liberty Lick, Indiana.
French Bulldog.
Washington Bulldog.
French Cuffs.
Freedom Cuffs.
French Dressing.
Constitution Dressing.
French Peas.
Betsy Ross Peas. Ralph the Talking Computer with ways to take the word French out of our language in honor of our current attitude. Ralph, not encyclopedic.
Well, it's not supposed to be a complete list.
All right.
But just a very good start toward de-Frenchifying our language.
Well, that it was. So,
and while we're at it,
We'll talk about that later. Once again, Ralph the Talking Computer, always a pleasure.
If I were capable of pleasure, it was all mine.
I guess thank you.
Cidade acendendo fogo. te abraçar de verdade. Cidade acendendo fogo das paixões num bar à beira-mar, no verde azul do Rio de Janeiro.
This is the show. I would, by the way, like to thank the probably in the low hundreds of listeners who responded to my request a couple weeks ago for suggestions as to how to get those annoying promos that now creep along the bottom of the screen where the sports scores and the news ticker were introduced to soften us up to bottom of screen creep before they said, no, now we can use them to promote our own shows. Hundreds of listeners suggested, put duct tape there. That's what you do with that duct tape that Tom Ridge told you to buy. Thank you for that. Most startling of all, perhaps, though, I was at a goofy meeting with some high-level executives of a network not to be named on this broadcast who affected absolute surprise that such a thing was happening at all. I said, you know, that they're one of the infuriating things about television right now is you're watching something, and they just can't wait to tell you to watch something else until even the commercial break. They got to run it at the bottom of the screen. And the head of this network said, no, we're not doing that. I said, yeah, networks you own are doing it. Really? Ladies and gentlemen. All right, so the Iraqis are destroying their, or have begun to destroy their Al-Zamud 2 missiles. These are the missiles that Hans Blix said exceeded the allowed range in terms of distance. The Iraqis argued with them and then complied by the Hans Blix deadline. The White House says, oh, tip of the iceberg. What about all the other weapons? Apropos, ladies and gentlemen, on February 24th, Newsweek magazine broke a story that raises questions about whether the weapons of mass destruction stockpiles attributed to Iraq still exist. The issue dated March 3rd reported the Iraqi weapons chief who defected from the region, from the regime in 1995, told UN inspectors that Iraq had destroyed its entire stockpile of chemical and biological weapons and its banned missiles. Until now, General Hussein Kamel, who was killed shortly after returning to Iraq in 1996, was best known for his role in exposing Iraq's deceptions about how far its pre-Gulf War biological weapons program had advanced. But Newsweek correspondent obtained a transcript of Kamel's 1995 debriefing by officials from the International Atomic Energy Agency and the UN inspections team known as UNSCOM. Inspectors were told that after the Gulf War, Iraq destroyed all its chemical and biological weapon stocks and the missiles to deliver them, the correspondent wrote in Newsweek. All that remained were hidden blueprints, computer disks, microfiches, and production molds. The weapons were destroyed secretly in order to hide their existence from inspectors in the hopes of someday resuming production after the inspections were finished. The statements were hushed up by the UN inspectors, according to Newsweek, in order to bluff Saddam into disclosing still more. CIA spokesman Bill Harlow angrily denied the Newsweek report. It is incorrect, bogus, wrong, untrue, he told Reuters the day after the report appeared, February 24th of this year. But on February 26th, a complete copy of the Kamel transcript, stamped sensitive, was obtained by Glenn Rangwala, the Cambridge University analyst who last month revealed that Tony Blair's intelligence dossier was plagiarized from a student thesis. In the transcript, Kamel says bluntly, all weapons, biological, chemical, missile, nuclear, were destroyed. He's a son-in-law of Saddam Hussein. His departure from Iraq carrying crates of secret documents on Iraq's past weapons programs was a major turning point in the earlier inspection saga. His defection has been cited repeatedly by administration officials. Interesting. Interesting. Also, of course, the number two or number three guy in Al-Qaeda was captured over the weekend in Pakistan. The Turkish parliament had a very confusing vote, but so far they have voted not to accept the $6 billion in direct payments from the United States and the $20 billion in loans to allow the United States to stage troops in Turkey for this possible war in Iraq. Turkey, our longtime ally, whom the Kurds are reportedly very afraid of if there is a war, that the Turks will come into northern Iraq, where the Kurds have had 12 years of autonomy under the protection of our no-fly zone. And the Kurds are more afraid of the Turks, according to some reports, than of the Iraqis at this point. All right. And meanwhile, the United States continues to lobby in the Security Council for the possible passage of this possible second resolution, which the United States didn't want originally and France wanted, and now the United States wants it and France doesn't want it. The non-permanent members will be the swing votes. They include, of course, Mexico, Chile, Pakistan, Cameroon, and Guinea. Phone lines are burning up, and probably not only at the UN.
Triumphant Eagle.
Hey, 43. Feeling pretty good about things today, huh?
Well, 41 have to be as dim as my Democrat friends think I am if I didn't celebrate the capture of the number two or three man in Al-Qaeda.
Mm.
I guess it does prove that Iraq wasn't distracting us from a war on terror after all. Proves we can walk on gum at the same time.
Yeah, I suppose you're right, but and a big feather in the cap of the intelligence community. About time. Taking some knocks.
Hey, 41, I know how you feel. I haven't been connected to the Rangers for nearly a decade, and when they lose, I still bleed Ranger, whatever their color is.
Yeah, but look here, Sprat, calling about this Korea situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is serious business.
Oh, I know it is. You know, that hasn't escaped my steel-like trap.
Yeah.
A lot of folks are saying I've closed my mind to the diplomatic option, but, you know, we're pursuing all avenues of diplomacy with just one little exception.
Which is
that we won't talk directly to the North Koreans.
Yeah.
That's what they want, C-41. What these people care about is face. The minute the United States agrees to bilabial talks with the North Koreans, they gain face. They will gain no face on my watch.
43, you see the intelligence on Kim Jong-il?
Yeah, I sure have. Big Daffy Duck fan, huh?
Well,
you know, everybody else likes Bugs or Porky. I mean, he's crazy.
Yeah, he's crazy like Ross Perot is crazy. You know, the crazier we think he is, the better the deal he can drive. So
yeah.
Let's not be afraid to do business with him before he ratchets the pressure up too far.
41, this is why the Gulf War didn't get you reelected. You lack moral clarity, with all respect.
Now, please don't start this again. It's beneath you.
No such thing.
Well,
see, what you call doing business with Kimmy Kim is giving in to nuclear blackmail. He just wants to scare us into paying him big time.
Well, no different from the Turks.
Oh, big difference. They don't have nukes.
Non-nuclear blackmail.
Exactly. Whole different ballgame. Moral clarity.
Yeah, I think he could take the opportunity of Saddam destroying his missiles to refocus on North Korea for a few days. Might be very wise.
Please. Colin's got us involved in suddenly caring about Cameroon.
And Colin's a fine person.
Cameroon. And Guinea. I mean, I remember when you couldn't even call a person that. Now we got to...
See, refocusing on North Korea would convince the Cameroons of the world that they weren't so crucial to you at the moment. So there goes their bargaining power.
Wait a minute. There's more than one Cameroon? What are they, islands? You know, I get the worst briefings. Look, 41, let me tell you something. Maybe I've never said it in so many words, or in other words, in so many other words. We tried Colin's whole nuance thing on North Korea. We got killed by some of our own people for not being consistent. If we're going to allow ourselves to be forced to choose a military option on Iraq, we got to really be on the same track with the Koreans. Or there goes your moral clarity.
Well, now look here, Sprout. Here's the nub of it. Maybe I haven't said this in so many words to you.
Yeah.
Moral clarity is like virginity. It's great, but you're going to lose it sooner or later. You've done a great job of convincing the world that you really do care about moral clarity. Great. Kim Jong-il has convinced the world that he really cares about nuclear weapons.
And Daffy Duck.
So each of you has a bargaining chip. But it's only worth something if you commit to using it.
Hey, 41, you know I respect the hell out of you.
Well.
But I do think sometimes that we just have a totally different view of the human soul. You don't pay off your enemies. You pay off your friends. Now, listen, Dad. Yeah. Connie's up here at Camp David, and to use Colin's word, we got to get nuanced with the president of the Cameroons.
Mm-hmm.
Reminded me he wants those dams.
Yeah.
So give my love to Mom.
Will do. Kisses to Laura.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
But each hurt makes my love a little stronger than before. I know the flowers won't remain. I can buy the cross to repair. It's a beauty, baby. Beauty, that's what it is. Yeah, it's a beauty, baby. Beauty, that's what it is. You've turned your eyes and showed me all you love to me. I've got so much love to give you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this edition of the show. Sunspots and all. I didn't hear him, did you? It's going to take more than the sun. No, it's going to take precisely the sun. Anyway, without even the assistance of the sun, this program will now conclude. It will return next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system throughout Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the powerful shortwave transmitter of WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, across north the grand sweep of North America via Sirius satellite radio, and on your computer whenever you want it around the world at two different locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. Too many W's. And you know what? It'd be just like the iceberg having another tip if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? All righty. Thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. We're still trying to figure out the email newsletter thing. It may resume. No guarantees, ladies and gentlemen. It's been hit by sunspots. Those damn sunspots. Ow, there's one now. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, the satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.